Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrude.
What's up, guys? I'm back. This episode's going to suck, and here we go.
It's not going to suck because of us.
No, we're the dream team. Yeah. Unfortunately, the team we talk about is not the dream team this past week.
The nightmare team. God, and it could get a whole lot worse just yet before the, next week could be a really miserable episode. Let's put it that way. But now as we say in Yorkshire, it's me and thee, me and you, troublesome twosome, to recap. Do you know what this might be, and next week might be, like the biggest and most meaningful episode that we've ever done? The reason for that, and the reasons for that, we're going to go into in this episode. But of course, the magnitude of the games that are approaching, the games that we just had, and what they mean for the Pioli era, it's heading towards crossroads, let's put it that way. Before we dive into all the action for this week's episode, thank you, as always, to our founding members on Substack: Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mack, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin MG and Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar, Rajat and Carlo Fassi. Great list of names there. Great group of people. Let's try and get that up to, let's get it up to me having to read out 15 names between now and the end of the season. That would be good, wouldn't it? And you can see
and
me
then
struggle.
We'll have Madison try and read it.
Yeah, that can be the incentive. But no, on a serious note, thank you to the founding members, and thank you to everybody who subscribes to us over on Substack. Just as a little insight, as we do each week now, into what has happened in the last week. The newsletter this week was obviously a preview of the Euro Derby, which we're going to talk about, the first leg between AC Milan and Roma, and some stats going into the tie. And of course, the newsletter, if you don't know already, also features a bulletin. So if you can't keep up with the stuff that's going out on the site every day, that's a good way to get a breakdown of the best bits. The bonus podcast, we spoke about the first leg with our resident Romanista, Ewan Burns. Some of you who follow the site will notice, he publishes a fair few articles and might not know that he's a Roma fan. So we spoke about the first leg with him over there. And of course, we're going to recap it now as well. And then the bonus article was about the 3-3 draw against Sassuolo and basically the failures that emerged from it, the rotation policy and stuff like that. And then there was another one that was published in the last 24 hours about how big the summer is and to expect the unexpected based on what we saw last summer with the sale of Tonali, the departure of Paolo Maldini. Basically, there could be a big shake-up coming. And that leads us into the Europa League. First leg. Pretty good.
There we go. That was solid. Yeah, nice. Mm.
That was good.
Now we just need Kate Abdo, huh?
In the middle somewhere. A rose between two thorns. That'd be nice. Anyway, first leg. Quarter final of the Europa League at San Siro against Roma. We predicted a first leg win for this one. It just, even though we acknowledge it's two teams in very good form, Roma have been on an upturn under De Rossi, at least in terms of results compared to Mourinho. We had won 7 in a row coming into this particular fixture. The pressure was on us really to try and win or get a positive result from the home leg, so we had something to take to the Olympico. Fucking nightmare in the end, really. Look, we're not out of it like we were the Champions League semi against Inter, where we lost 2-0 and it was like, oh yeah, they're just way better than us. This is, I'd say it's still a bit open, and of course we're going to preview the second leg, but it just didn't go to plan.
Yeah, I know I predicted a comfortable win. I said we'd dominate them. And to an extent, I feel like that was still true, minus the win part, obviously. I just don't really feel like they did anything to us. Yeah, they scored a goal. Lukaku was more offside than Chukwueze was in the Sassuolo game, so they should never have had the corner that led to their goal anyways. I do think the penalty and stoppage time was legitimate. Like I said on the bonus, at the end of the day, Giroud still missed a point-blank chance. Like, there were opportunities to score, and we fumbled them, so it is on us. But it wasn't like Roma really shut us down, I feel like we just didn't play to our own abilities. Obviously, De Rossi came out and said he watched the Derby defeats, and and decided how he was gonna beat us. He said he was like, don't let us have as much possession. Well, we still beat them on possession, so it's not like he was even that successful at that. I think it just was a perfect storm midweek game, and I don't think it'll happen again. I do think we come back and pull off the I don't know, the comeback here, but
the remontada in Rome.
Yeah, I mean,
that could be next week's title.
That, like, oh, God, I hope it is.
Yeah, the Rome.
I don't know, man. I felt more frustration than anything. It wasn't like a. It wasn't a game that really made me feel like we weren't good enough. It just made me feel like we didn't play good enough.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, one of the last things I said on the bonus pod, again, invite anyone to go and watch it. You can do a week for free on the Substack. But was I just feel like we can't play that badly again. I think the word that I would use to most aptly describe the evening in general before talking about specific incidents is flat. Like, the whole thing was just flat. We were expecting, because both teams have been pretty free scoring in 2024 at least. Both teams like to play quite an expansive style to try and move the ball quickly. I just expected multiple goals. I thought both teams scoring was nailed on, you know, from a betting perspective. I felt confident we'd score multiple goals, and it was just all flat. Roma started the game well. I'm willing to give them quite a lot of credit for their role in making things difficult for us. I think they kept the ball very well in the opening stages. They frustrated us. They didn't let us play out. We were camped in a little bit. They didn't create too much, but they had that little spell where they were generating corners and set pieces. You start eventually, given the threat that they posed from them, they were going to make us pay, and they did. And I think what was most frustrating about this is that before the game, it didn't exactly take a set-piece specialist to highlight the fact that Roma have scored 19, which became 20 set-pieces already this season. That is a huge amount. And Mancini had scored the winner in the derby against Lazio a few days prior from a close-range header from a corner. And a simple blocking mechanism means that RLC loses his man. Mancini's there again, couldn't really miss from there. You know, he's 6 yards out and he just glances it into the far corner. And I just feel like that was a bit of an atmosphere popper, for want of a better phrase. Like, if there was a bubble, a bit of a cauldron building, like, you know, home advantage, you want to make the most of that. It was just like, oh, we've started badly and we're behind. We haven't managed to weather the storm. And now we've got to come from behind against a team that will be very comfortable in just trying to shut us down and stifle us. Goal pissed you off a bit?
Yeah, it did. It was just like, it was another corner. I know we've gotten better at defending them this season compared to the last, I don't know, 7 consecutive seasons where every set piece was a surefire goal conceded. But it's just like, at what point do we figure out how to defend a corner? You know, mm-hmm. Every other team in Europe has figured it out. Why are we the exception? Why have we, like, the amount of goals we concede from set pieces is so high compared to everyone else. Like, we are the anomaly. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't know what it is. If it's just a old man Pioli not changing. I mean, if there's one thing we've learned, it's that he is a stubborn old man. So, I guess that wouldn't surprise me too much if that was it. If they're just not practicing these, I don't know. But
speaking of stubborn old men, I think this is the Mourinho legacy of this Roma team. You know, it's not been that long in relative terms since they changed coach. So of course, there's going to be patterns that remain the same and stuff. But, you know, yeah, 20 set piece goals this season is a ridiculously high number. Yes, we should have dealt with that corner better, but just generally speaking, I think it's obvious that Roma are just a very good, and they're a big team. Physically, they're a big team. But I guess sometimes you've also got to give a bit of credit and say that Lukaku blocking thing for RLC worked an absolute charm. You need things like that to add a bit of value. And that's what Mourinho has always tried to do, is utilize his team's physicality to the maximum. As you kind of alluded to, there was a blatant offside in the build-up to that particular corner, but the El Shaarawy shot produced a really, really good save from Maignan. It deflected and it was dipping under the bar, and he leapt up and he palmed it over. What's ironic is, if that goes in, it's still 0-0. because they'd have reviewed the play and seen on VAR that he was offside in the build-up, and yet we concede from the corner and we're 1-0 down. It is bizarre, that, but we tried to get back into the... Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just going to say it's interesting how, like... Well, no, I guess the Europa League doesn't have semi-automated offside, does it? Yeah.
I don't believe so, no.
It's just, I don't know. It's interesting because they were allowed to set up so quickly for the corner. Whereas I feel like every chance we get the ball, it's like, hold on, we got to wait and make sure you're allowed to do this. Like, I don't know. Obviously, I'm a fan, so there's bias. But it seems like that's the case every time it's our turn to do something. We got to review this. But anyone else, it's like, it was too fast. We missed it. You know, I don't know. I'm probably just bitching, but.
There'll be some people who reply to this, and I totally understand why, that will reference a still image that came out after the game that seemed to show, with lines drawn on, that Lukaku was level. I don't put any faith in that because of the angle that it was taken from. Like, it was nowhere near level with him. You know, like, in terms of laterally along the sidelines, it was almost at a 45 degree angle. There's no way you can draw lines from that perspective. I also have doubts about if it was taken at the moment the ball left the foot, or if it was actually a bit before. I just think that because it didn't go to a proper VAR review, you can't look at that and say he was level.
Fan drawn lines too. Yeah. It wasn't. So, I mean,
he looked off. He looked a yard off.
You don't know
if
that was drawn by a Roma fan, drawn by an Inter fan. You know, drawn by a Milan fan, it could have been like, it was fan drawn. It's not official. It doesn't count. So, yeah. I'm with you on that. I don't take any, that means nothing to me.
No. And the goal came from that. I guess then there was the test of how we'd respond. And in all honesty, I actually think that we responded quite well. We were pretty close to leveling with that Giroud header that Lukaku cleared off the line. Then there was another scramble where Smalling cleared one off the line. There was Reinders shooting every time from distance and drawing some saves. There was nobody there to capitalize on the rebounds. Svilar, I thought, had a pretty good game, to be honest, in Roma's goal. Then the second half comes about when you're really hoping that we sort of put our foot on the accelerator and generate some serious pressure. To be honest, it didn't come. It was a bit stale. I think Roma kept the ball really well. We were chasing shadows for quite a bit. I would say that we looked knackered as well. I thought we looked pretty tired going into that final 20. We made some changes. The introduction of Chukwueze definitely made a difference. We should be at least level. Like, on the balance of play and looking at the controversial incidents that occurred, one of which we'll speak about in a sec, we should be level. Chukwueze sides through their defence on the right-hand side and provides a pullback to Giroud, the man for the big occasions, who can't put it in from 4 yards out, hits the crossbar somehow when it was harder to miss. I don't know what to say. Look, misses happen, but they can't happen in that moment, you know?
Not for someone who is literally the most prolific goal scorer in the history of French football. Like,
yeah.
If I miss that shot, okay, you know, that's different. But Olivier Giroud,
just any way.
World Cup winner, you know, like, he's won multiple titles all across Europe, and he misses that shot. It's like,
he scored goals with scorpion kicks.
Yeah,
and that he couldn't. I don't know, man.
From deep, like,
why? My main question is, if I saw him, I'd ask him this: why are you trying to roof it? Why are you trying to get it under the ball and hit it into the roof of the net? Like, you know that if it's on target, it's going in from there. So just make sure it's on target, no matter how soft or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Look, if you, and we'll come on to this with the Pulisic chance in the Sassuolo game. If you hit it and it's straight at the keeper, we can criticize a bad shot, but we can't criticize a glaring miss. You know, we can't say you missed the target from 4 yards out. That's the worst of it. It's like missing a penalty. Like, missing the target from a penalty is the worst of the worst. I think he's outperformed all expectations for us. He's been the author of so many big moments in the last couple of seasons and stuff like that. But it was really disappointing to miss that, because I also wonder, had we scored that goal at that moment, could we have gone on and nicked a winner? You know, the momentum would have been really with us then. And instead, it felt like we've just wasted our last chance of the game, you know?
Yeah, it did. I don't know if we would have been able to get a winner after that, I think. Because when did this happen? It was like the 83rd minute. It was pretty late, wasn't it?
I think it was even inside the final five, but there was one like there's quite a lot of added minutes.
I guess anything's possible. You know, we've seen teams concede too quickly, so it's very possible. But yeah, it really did. It took the wind out of the sails, and yet we still had another opportunity with the handball. I mean, to me, it was so blatantly obvious, like. The angle I saw, his arm was stretched out. The only concern is, was it more of the sleeve? To me, it looked kind of elbow. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's up to the VAR to decide, which they obviously said no. But yeah, it is what it is, I guess. I don't know. We just got to put those chances away.
I would. This is another one of those things where I would change the law before you know what I mean? I would make the law a bit different compared to how things actually play out. But what I would say about that is that from the replays that they showed on our broadcast feed, at least, Abraham jumps up to try and head the ball, presumably, misjudges it, probably jumps a bit too high, and his arms are out, and he's in the process of sort of landing, and as you do, your arms come in. So his arms are in the process of coming back inside, but they're still outstretched at the moment that the ball makes contact. So while I'm saying they should be absolutely stonewalled to be given as penalties for handballs, I think by the current letter of the law, that should have been given. And I also think I was surprised that we spoke about this on the bonus. There was one, maybe two Milan players who strongly appealed for it. And you do wonder if the entire team had surrounded the ref. Not that I condone it, but we've seen what pressure can do. Look at Inter, like every time they get a half shout, they're surrounding the ref, and Marotta's giving it the little side eye thing, mainly because of his wang eye.
But he's just looking forward. But
yeah. But you just wonder if that bit of pressure could have forced a lengthier look at it. Instead, after about 10 seconds, the ball was back in play. Part of me, as a football purist, is glad that it wasn't given, because a decision at that moment influences the entire outcome of the game. But at the same time, I think with the amount we've been punished for similar and the way that the laws are, I think it should have been given.
Yeah, and I also feel like, look, a lot of people have different opinions on this, but knowing that their goal was directly related to an offside, you would think that there'd be a makeup call in there. So I was so confident that we were given it, A, because by the letter of the law, it should have been, and B, because they already fucked us on a goal, which was game-altering. They didn't have any other chances after that. You know, like, throw me a bone here. Like, I don't know. If it comes down to it and we've lost this tie 1-0, I'll be very disappointed in the way this game went just because of these two incidents. But, I don't know. You gotta put away your chances. I guess that's the story at the end of the day, is we didn't do enough.
Yeah, agreed. Tops and flops, and then we'll move on to the preview. Top for me, I'm leaning towards saying that it was Chukwueze, because he came off the bench and he seemed to give us that spark and, I don't know, a bit of creativity. We needed a moment from nothing, really, and he did essentially provide it. It's just that it didn't result in the assist that it should have done. So I think Chukwueze is a good shout, but I'm going to go with Gabbia because how are we meant to pronounce it? Isaac always kicks off about this. Is it Gabbia?
You're supposed to say both B's.
Gabbia.
Gabbia.
Gabbia. No, Gabbia. Yeah, anyway, Matthew Cage was my man of the match. I thought he did a pretty good job in limiting the damage that Lukaku was able to do. Now, slightly separate and contradictory note, I thought Lukaku was outstanding. Like, we really struggled. We struggled with his hold-up play, though, thankfully, not his finishing. Like, he is such a unit that when he backs into a defender, he is receiving that ball and he's able to distribute it, or you foul him. We took a couple of different approaches. One of them was trying to sort of get into him from behind, little knee to the back of his knee and a bit of rough and tumble, and then trying to get around the front of him, but that didn't work either because he holds his ground so well. We struggled with his hold-up play and bringing other players into the game on the counter-attack. And another thing I'll say before throwing it over to you is El Shaarawy was magnificent as well. He worked so hard down that right flank. Him and Celik doubled up on Liao, and you know, Leao left the field to jeers. Not sure if it's because of his performance or the fact that Pioli brought him off, you know, as one of our only match winners. I think it's probably the latter. But yeah, El Shaarawy did a proper job on us, and Dybala was then moved over to the left as a result. So yeah, I'll say Gabbia for the amount that he was able to limit Lukaku.
Before I pick my top, you mentioned Chukwueze and El Shaarawy, and that reminded me of another ridiculous decision by the referee. Christian Pulisic runs behind El Shaarawy. No contact, just runs behind him. El Shaarawy falls over. Pulisic immediately carded. Like,
that was ridiculous.
Immediately. It was.
What did he say?
Right? Looking at him, he's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
yeah, he went to the ref. He did a John McEnroe, didn't he? He was like, you cannot be serious.
I mean, it was just, that's how you know. And if you look at our record with this referee, we've actually never won a game while he's refereed us. We had one draw and like four losses. I'm not going to say each one was controversial. I don't remember them all. I just saw a stat, but yeah, I feel like there has to be. I mean, the guy's a fucking idiot. Anyways.
Clement Turpin, more like Dick Turpin, Robin Bastard.
Hell yeah.
Dick Turpin could be the title.
My top for this match, I think I will go Chukwueze. He came on, made somewhat of a difference. Ultimately, it didn't matter, but yeah. For all the reasons you said.
Flop of the match, Giroud, for me, was limited in his overall involvement. And a striker with his experience has to score that chance. And has to make sure there's other chances. Like, he had that one cleared off the line as well. I'd say that's unlucky.
Oh, the double. He headed twice.
I mean, you can say that's unlucky. The Lukaku one was the slightly better chance. But you can also say, could he head that downwards? You know, then there's not a chance of clearing the ball. I don't know, but it's the big one at the end that will be remembered. Yeah, you got a score.
Yeah, I echo all of that. It's got to be Drew.
And preview.
Boom.
Where do we start with this? Let's start with the
3-0.
Yeah, let's start. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, and now we work back from the conclusion to, you know, how you got there. Let's start with the team. So there's a bit of debate at the moment. Can you basically leave Chukwueze out of the starting lineup? Does that mean that Pulisic would play as a 10 and RLC drops to the bench? Would that be too attacking? Would it leave us too open? Essentially, what team are you picking for this? Tomori comes back in, I presume. Kier and Chiao are not at their best after the Sassuolo game, which we're going to mention. So it'll be Gabbia at the back as well.
Definitely. Tomori, obviously. I think that's the easiest call ever. And I know Pioli's not going to bench Giroud, but my God, do I want to see it happen. Like, you can't keep rewarding this guy. Jovic has now scored more goals in 2024 off the bench than Giroud has as a starter in 2024. Giroud has almost 2.5 times the minutes, and he's got one less goal than Jovic, which is crazy because we're talking about Jovic becoming a flop again. You know, he had his like run and now we're just kind of like, meh. But it's no good. And I wouldn't even start Jovic. I would definitely start Okafor. I would go back to I don't remember what game it was, 2 games ago, where we did have Pulisic as the 10, Chukwueze on the right wing, Leao. And
the Lecce game, yeah.
Who was the striker in that? Was it Giroud?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, fuck Giroud. Make it Okafor. And that's the way to go. Now, obviously, the Derby's right after, so that's not going to happen. It's going to be Chukwueze, it'll probably be Pulisic, but it should be Chukwueze at right wing. This is hard because at some point, Leao needs rest, right? He played the 90 against Sassuolo, played 90 against Roma. He's going to play 90 against Roma, then 90 again against Inter, then 90 again against Juventus. At some point, he's going to need a nap, so maybe don't let him play the full 90. Maybe give him 60 and then throw an Okafor. I don't know. It'll be hard because obviously this is probably a more important game than the Derby for our season because it's the only competition we're still in and we could turn around a 1-goal deficit, especially against Roma. Like, who the fuck is Roma in this, you know? So, I guess start the strong players, but give them a rest towards the end.
What you said there is correct. Like, although fan sentiment and, you know, what the derby means and everything, you're thinking we cannot let them bastards win it on Monday against us. And we are going to obviously preview that game. But in terms of the overall scheme of the season, the only way that we can really respond to them winning the title, no matter how it comes, is by having a trophy of our own. And you've got to have an eye on that Liverpool scoreline. Okay, yeah, Atalanta would dog walk us in the final in Dublin if it came to it. But yeah, it's a less daunting task with them out of the competition. Obviously, Leverkusen have now sealed the league, so they'll try finish the job against West Ham. That would be a really tough semi-final. But sort of like with the Coppa Italia when Inter got knocked out, if you take the absolute favourite out of it, all of a sudden, you know, the path kind of opens up a bit more. So that's why it's absolutely imperative that we put on a much better display at the Olympico and we do everything we can to get through. I never thought it would come to this where it's like, we've just got to try. We've just got to believe. We have to win the game to give ourselves a chance. You know, if we win the game, we will at least get to extra time. We have won on how many? Is it like 3 out of 4 recent visits to the Olympico against Roma? Like it's our record there has improved. Yeah. We won there earlier in the season, 2-1. In this case, that would be enough to force extra time. I think the team picks itself for this one. I'm saying, obviously, Maignan comes back into goal after he was rested against Sassuolo.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh,
we haven't talked about Sassuolo yet. Never mind.
No, we haven't yet. No. I am going to pick Florenzi at right back. I think Calabria was exposed, would be putting it nicely. You know, he's been rinsed a fair few times recently. Also, I just think Florenzi would have that bit of extra edge against his old club. And he knows about playing big European nights in that ground. You know, he was part of that Roma team that went on the run and came back against Barca and stuff like that. So I'd maybe edge him, but, you know, it's a bit of a toss-up in that position. Gabia and Tomori centre-backs, Teo. Then I think you go back to Benacer, Reinders, even though I think Benacer has left a bit to be desired in recent weeks. I think you pick Pulisic on the right, and I think you stick with RLC as the 10. As frustrating as he's been, he was the one who got us a penalty from nowhere in that first game against Roma this season. And then obviously Liao on the left. And I would also change Giroud up front. I don't think he's going to do that, but I would play Okafor. I think that Roma, when they play three at the back, and the three at the back that they play are so built to deal with crosses coming into a static centre forward. Like, that is bread and butter for them. They will head away anything that comes in, and we saw it in the first leg. So what can you do? You can change the cards on the table. You can play more of a fluid system, and maybe Okafor's runs in behind can cause some problems. Or Jovic, if you want. I just don't want to see Giroud there again. And then I think it doesn't have to necessarily be that really attacking front four from the start, because ultimately if the game's still 0-0 after 60 minutes, it's very much still open. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you commit from minute one to playing that front four of Chuk, Pulisic, Liao and whoever up front, and we score, then all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, what do we do? Do we just keep attacking the way that the team is built, or do we bring one of them off to then go to a bit more of a balanced team? I just think you want to be able to go into that extra gear rather than, you know, potentially having to shift back if things go as planned. So I would say, you know, if it's 55, 60 minutes and we're not creating an awful lot and the game's still level, that's when you maybe change into that front four, but I wouldn't start with it. That's it. Do you think we do it?
Yeah, I do. I think we do. Look, the last game was our first defeat against Roma since 2019. I think we're going to come out and we're going to get the job done. 2-0.
I'll certainly take that. Write it down, folks. Write this down. Show me your bet slips. Any betting companies want to partner with us, let us know. Email in the description. We're winning on penalties. We're winning in a penalty shootout. I don't know. I'm not going to go any further than that. Who's going to score a winning penalty, any of that stuff? I just feel like I've just got this feeling that we're going to win on penalties, just like we did against Lazio in the Cup semi-final a few years back when Romagnoli scored against his boyhood club. Maybe Florenzi scores against his boyhood club to send us to the semis. Now, that would be a story. But I feel like we're going to win on penalties. Watch it be 2-0 Roma now. let's move on. Sassuolo. On a sassy Sunday.
Oof, good one. That was clever.
Sunset Sarsaparilla, Sarsaparilla, whatever. The Fallout. Fallout. Did you ever play Fallout?
Yes. Well, Sarsaparilla is just what they used to call root beer in the Wild West.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Used to sell them back all the time and at Old Tucson Studios in the desert. Yeah, good times.
Yeah, the new Coca-Cola as well, weren't there?
Yeah.
That was a cool brand in itself. Like, I wish someone would have made that. Maybe somebody did, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, this was a bit of a thriller in the end, unnecessarily. So we knew that there were probably going to be changes for this game. And again, there's been an awful lot of revisionism after the fact, after the full-time whistle. Why did he make so many changes? Blah, blah, blah. We know why he made so many changes. It's because we lost the first leg against Roma and we need to field our strongest and freshest possible 11 in the second leg. I don't think when that starting lineup was announced, people could say it's a risk, but it's always going to be a risk when you're rotating players. It's the same for any team that's between European games. Look at Liverpool, for example, at the weekend. You know, they lost to Palace. Arsenal lost at home to Aston Villa because playing a league game between two really important European games is difficult. That's why I thought that there was always, against a team that's scrapping for survival, a possibility that we drop points in this one. In the end, we did drop points, but we fought pretty hard to get something out of the game. I guess we start with a defensive calamity in the opening, the opening 20 minutes, wasn't it, basically?
Opening Kier, 10, we were down 2-0.
Yeah, the Kier Florenzi right side of the defence did not get to grips with Armand Lloriente at all. The first goal actually came from the right side. It was a cross in, Pinamonti left alone towards the back end of the penalty area, and that was a nice finish, to be fair. I like Pinamonti. I'm surprised he hasn't been linked with us yet. I know he's ex-Inter and stuff like that, but he's now got 10 league goals for a pretty awful Sassuolo side, you know, young Italian centre-forward. I like him, and it just lit a bulb in my head, like, maybe he could be a guy to take a look at. That happened, and then the second goal was fucking embarrassing. Like, literally the freedom of Reggio Emilia behind Florenzi to run in and then Sportiello, who's in for the fatigued Maignan, makes a good initial save on Lloriente, and then he's allowed just to tap the rebound in, and we're 2-0 down. Shit start.
Yeah, I mean, that sums it up. Our defense was ass. I complained about the rotation because, you know, I was here last season, and every single time he did this, when the excuse was, you know, we're playing for the Champions League, which, yeah, we were. We absolutely were. I got it. I understood it. Especially towards the semifinal. But we dropped points in all those games. And it was so obvious we were doing it again this game. Every time he does it, what ends up happening is we go behind, and then he throws on every single starter, and then they have to work overtime to either draw level or still lose. And as a result, now the people you wanted to rest are probably worked harder, and we didn't gain the 3 points like we should have. I understand why he did it, of course. Yeah, you want to rotate that. You want to protect your strong players. But history shows that it wasn't going to go that way. So I don't know why he keeps thinking, you know, you could do the same thing over and over again and eventually it's going to work. Especially when Maignan pulls up fatigued or whatever on the final day. Like, at that point, maybe you make some big changes, because it's not like Tomori played the last midweek game. I understand you don't want to risk him getting hurt or anything like that, but I don't know. Maybe it would have been a good idea to get him fresh. He already had a week off, so I would have probably kept Tomori in there. When you make these heavy rotations, you know, the idea, at least to me, you have one or two starters still in each line, you know, to make sure it's safe. Obviously, I think Maignan would have played had he had been fit. So I don't blame Pioli for doing that. That you don't have a choice. Sportiello is your only option at that point. You know, it's not like he rotated him for the sake of rotating him. Teo asked to play because he's a man, so that makes sense. Then you look. Kier has no business on this team anymore at all, and he hasn't for a while. People try to defend him. You're wrong. Look, he's a wonderful human. I'm sure he's a great guy. You know, he got the Nobel Peace Prize or whatever, but the dude's not a fucking defender anymore. Okay. He's, I mean, there is a minute and a half long, like, low light reel of him just from this game. That shouldn't be happening. Those shouldn't exist. You know, there's not enough. So he shouldn't be playing. At the very least, if you're going to rotate all your center backs, throw in Simic.
Yeah, totally agree.
Where's he been? Young, strong. I mean, the dude is massive. You see the pictures of him. He's the biggest guy in the Primavera by a long shot. Granted, you know, they're kids, so it's not too difficult. But Simic is big, man. He's ready for a real team. He should be playing. He should be getting these minutes. He's looked good in every game he's played for us. Who was the partner? It was Chow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could argue Chow is a starter, but I would have done Tomori Simic or... Yeah, I would have done Tomori Simic.
Even Tomori Chow would have been...
Better, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree Simic over Kier now, from now until the end of the season.
I understand Florenzi. Florenzi is fine. Go ahead.
I just say one thing to consider with the lack of use of the Primavera players is that... is it Thursday? Wait. Friday, we play the Youth League Final Four. So I could understand maybe not wanting to risk any preparation in the build-up for that, because obviously that is a massive moment in their young careers. However, you can also make a case that Simic shouldn't even be with them anymore. You know, he should be our third or fourth choice centre-back, and while there's rumours of teams sniffing around and we can't get him to sign a new long-term deal, I wouldn't blame him for saying, I want to leave. You know, where's my pathway? You know, big defensive crisis and you're playing fucking Teo at centre-back instead of giving me a shot.
Yeah, I mean, if you're him, you're looking around, you're seeing this. Look, young kids, I don't know how old he is. Is he 20, 21?
19, maybe.
So when you're a teenager and you're literally at the highest level of competitive sports and you're seeing guys like Kier ahead of you fumbling 18. Left and right, like, you got an ego, you're ready to go. You're like, I could play. I have played and I've proven I'm good. I'm not getting rewarded. Fuck this guy, I'm out. Like, he could leave. And, you know, I would blame Pioli if he did. So, yeah, moving on from him, though, definitely Florenzi over Calabria. That made sense. I get it. That's a good rotation. Midfield, I actually thought was fine. You know, I think those were good rotations as well. And I thought it was good rotation up front, except for Jovic. I would have started Okafor. Again, I've been preaching that for a long time. Jovic has not done well as a starter. This was his first time scoring as a starter. And it still, again, came when there were two strikers on. You know, he only scores when it's a two-striker formation, which means when it's just long balls over the top and he's in the box. You know, when we're in desperation mode, that's the only time he gets the ball. So, would have started Okafor, but the rest is good. Happy with the rest of it. So, it is what it is.
I wonder if, and this leads us on to our first goal, I wonder if the decision to start Liao and not, like, fully commit to the rotation, because Liao and Teo are arguably the players who, you know, need to be 100%. They need to be rested. They're the difference makers. They weren't good in the first leg against Roma, so we need them to be firing. But I just wonder if the decision to leave them in, especially Liao, was to try and provoke a response, you know, to get them into gear psychologically. To say is Liao, for Liao, it worked. You know, it was a good performance from him. He sort of put the team on his back. He scored a goal from absolutely nowhere to half the deficit and get us back into it. I thought at first he'd kind of like bundled through those two defenders. He actually chopped the ball onto his shin and then, you know, nudged it between the two and got there on the other side. And then rather than lash it for the top corner like he normally does, to just side foot that through the gap, through the tunnel that opened up between the keeper and the defender was a brilliant first time finish. So it was a gorgeous goal. I said at the time in the chat, it reminded me of his one against Fiorentina, the first, you know, wonder goal that he scored for us. And it really did remind me of that one. And yeah, that was a moment from nothing that got us back into the game. Then early on in the second half, Lloriente scores again to make it 3-1. And that's when you're getting into that area that you talked about with the selection, where you're just having to throw everyone on to try and salvage a result. That is the one, because, you know, I agree with what you said. We've seen what has happened in the past when we've gone for mass rotation. It almost certainly leads to drop points, you know, without many exceptions. I think the difference this time compared to last season is that we're arguably not really balancing commitments at the moment. We've got a top four spot locked up. We've probably got second locked up the way that Juve are playing at the moment.
Yeah,
I know the derby's important and, you know, that factors in a little bit, but I'd say that we're not in danger of missing out on the top four as we were last season, and that's where the rotation dilemma really came in, because it's like we cannot afford to drop points. You should never say we can afford to drop points. That's not the right mentality, but I think in this situation, I can understand the rotation. I'm just surprised he didn't lean into it even more, you know, with 10 changes. Just change everybody. Mm-hmm. Or when we're behind in the game, don't just go for the comfort blanket and throw everyone on for 30, 35 minutes. Stick with it and see where we're at for the last 15. Because we were creating plenty. Like, if you look at the stats for this game, which I will get up now, we have absolutely battered them. We were by far the better team. We looked like scoring every time we went forward, to be honest. We had a bit of bad luck, millimetre offsides for Chukwueze on two counts. But we had 3.47 XG to their 1.08, 67% possession, which is two-thirds of the ball, 23 total shots to their 10, 7 shots on target to their 5, 6 big chances to their 2. It was a domination, and mm-hmm. yeah, you kind of feel a touch relieved to have come away not losing the game. It's just strange how that works. Jovic and Okafor, again, the heroes, I guess. Right place, right time, instinctive finishes. Not much to say on them. Okafor's impact is ridiculous at this point. I think he's tied for the most goals off the bench, or he might be one behind in terms of goals from the bench in top five leagues in Europe, you know. If a player is scoring every time they're called upon, or nearly every time, then that should suggest they deserve a start.
You would think, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was an obvious change there, wasn't there? You start Okafor on the left and give Liao a rest, but here we are. And then Jovic, yeah, as you mentioned, he does only seem to score when he's got somebody to play off. And when I think it's not so much like, I mean, it is partly a knockdowns thing and there being more second balls and stuff, but I just think it's having someone who occupies another defender, which gives him a bit more space to operate in. That's the striker he's always going to be. He was like dropping in and playing almost as a number 10 at times, and he played a few good passes and he looked quite useful when he dropped a tad deeper. But we can't be playing Giroud and Jovic up front from now until the end of the season. I just don't think that's sustainable, really. And that's what's a bit of a worry about Jovic moving forward, is what really happens with him next season if we don't change formation, if we don't bring in someone who's similar to Giroud, like, you know.
I mean, I think we could get away with it if like we made a permanent switch to a 4-4-2. Mm-hmm. I mean, Loftus-Cheek is the guy who gets sacrificed in that. And personally, that alone is an improvement for us. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's the only time Jovic really does anything. If we start a game with that, then he might be, you know, popping off left and right. The other issue is then you have both strikers playing, you know, full 90. So then you're almost guaranteeing Okafor gets some minutes per game, but then you're also playing all three strikers every game. So I don't know. Like you said, the fitness, eventually that's going to come back to get you, but there's only like 8 games left in the season, right? Like in all comps, 7 maybe. So it's like, what do you got to lose?
once we get into Juve out of the way as well, you know, depending on how we do in the Europa League, I guess like the league schedule is not bad for us at all, really. So,
like, yeah, we're talking about a draw against 19th place.
Yeah, fair point. Yep. Yeah, with Jovic, it's a strange one because like you can't build a team around him. You know, you can't say we're going to play two strikers because of Jovic. But at the same time, you know that you almost need to construct something around him to get the best out of him. So I just wonder if that'll factor into the reflections over a renewal. Yeah, that's it. I mean, nothing else. We had chances to win it. I will say that much. There was that run and Giroud leaning back, lofts one over the bar when he really should have hit the target. Yeah. Pulisic did hit the target with what I would say is a bit of a better chance. There was a debate in the chat about this. I mean, I maintain my stance that it wasn't a total miss like Giroud in both games, so I'm not going to hammer him for that, but you're 4 yards out. You've got to find a way.
No, I agree. So, and for obviously the listeners that they don't know what we're talking about, Isaac very weirdly came at me because I was saying that this was Pulisic's worst ever game, and I was actually going to pick him for my flop for us. I thought he was awful. You know, his first two touches led to throw-ins for the other team. His third touch was a back pass. He slipped like six times, and he made a couple really shitty crosses and great opportunities. And then the part that I got yelled at for was I said he missed a great shot. I stand by that. I think in movement, in motion, to get it first time like that and have it on target makes it a great shot by a technique. Now, it was straight at the keeper. There were plenty of better options for where to put it, which makes it a bad chance missed. But I don't know. Apparently, I was being biased for that somehow. I mean, when I was literally going after my favorite player, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I think everyone's emotions were just a little high at that moment. But
and also, like, part of it has to be that we've been accustomed to him burying every chance that he gets. So, you know, that it speaks more about the standards he's set rather than, you know, if he's at Chelsea, given the struggles that he had towards the end of his time there, then he's not even in the position to get that opportunity, but he's playing with confidence. He's getting in good areas. So he scored important goals for us this season. That winner at Genoa is a good example of a first time shot that he buried that was a lot harder. So, yeah.
And he came on right after Chukwueze had his second goal called offside, you know? So, like, Chukwueze was having a fantastic game, and then he was yanked, and I felt like he was robbed by it coming off. And then Pulisic put in a stinker, so it just amplified how bad his game was, I think. It made everyone really, like, they already were mad at Pioli this whole game, as they should have been. And then to see, like, the guy who was objectively the best player, well, probably not objective, I'd say Liao might have been better. But one of the better players come off, and then his replacement just have a really bad game. It was like, yeah, let's highlight every bad moment of this year. But, yeah, you know, what's next? Tops and flop?
Before tops and flops, I just want to highlight one more thing that I think people will pick up on in the comments. I think what this game, as others have highlighted above all, is that this is not a squad that has plug-and-play players. Like I've said at various points during the season that the difference between Inter's depth and our depth is that theirs is functional, in the sense that if a player is out, Inzaghi can put a player in that role who will do the same job. You know, you look at the back three, they're all a similar mold of centre-back, the wing-backs, the depth that they've got in midfield. Up front, you could argue a bit, Thuram, Lautaro, there's a drop-off to Sanchez and whomever it is. But I just think, like, we played Kier, Chiao, Florenzi as part of our back four, and we still played a really high line. And it's like, okay, if Pioli's going to remain our manager, and this is his rigid tactical setting, as well as splitting the team, by the way, you know, that 5-0-5 that people have talked about, when we're chasing games, it's still there, and it was there again. If you're leaving your players exposed, like, if we're playing with such a high line, then it seems so obvious to me that we need to put more athletic defenders in there, defenders with at least an ounce of recovery pace, who are not going to be as frightened by one-on-one battles. I think we welcome them all over the pitch, and Sassuolo are not a good team. They're second bottom for a reason. The reason that we allowed them to get a point from this game and to score three goals is because defensively we are hanging these players out to dry. You know, that has been my one defense of Kier and Florenzi, is when you instruct them to leave 40 metres of open field behind them against two pretty tricky wingers, they are going to be fucked. Like, that's what's going to happen. So something needs to change there, and that's something perhaps for the summer window. That being said, flop, Kier, bin. Top.
Yeah.
Top, I guess, Liao.
Yeah, I think I got to agree on Liao. I'm going to go Pioli. Look, the commentator made a ridiculously silly comment towards the end of the game. He said, you have to give Pioli credit because he made every correct substitution. That's because he didn't play any starters. Everyone coming on was supposed to be the best player to begin with. Like, he didn't have any option. You can't say he made the wrong decision when all the right decisions were on the bench. You know, like, I get the idea for rotation, but all we had to do was not lose to the team in 19th place, and Inter can't win the Scudetto in the Derby. And now here we are.
As it turns out, yeah, if we'd have won against Sassuolo, because Inter dropped points, they wouldn't have been able to win the title against us at all. Yeah. And yet here we are. We've left the door open for them. I think it's a bit of an eye-opener as well in terms of this newfound depth that the management keep preaching about. If we can't rotate players en masse and at least look competitive, yes, we were dominant. I know I've said that we dominated the game, but you can't win the game away against Sassuolo with mostly reserves. Like, it suggests that actually our second team isn't that good. And Inter's would have won easily. That, I think that is the difference, unfortunately. Flop Pioli. Let's move on. Inter preview, speaking of.
Yeah, let's make this quick.
Look, it's not as bad as it could have been. You know, after 80 minutes, they were winning 2-1 against Cagliari, and it was looking like they'd just have to draw against us, or basically we'd have to beat them in order to stop them celebrating the title against us on Monday night. We've lost 5 in a row of them. We lost every single derby in 2023. I've never known it to be this one-sided in my entire time watching Milan, and that, in a strange way, is after a period where we alternated Scudetto wins and we met each other in a Champions League semi-final, and yet we're still talking about how one-sided this fixture has been in recent times. I think this, in addition to obviously the Roma game, is like, it's what you hang your hat on with Pioli. If he hasn't learned, if he hasn't devised any kind of tactical mechanism, a lineup, whatever it might be, to combat our kryptonite, then bin him off. He's had enough time to come up with something. And if we lose this fixture again, I'd even say if we go through against Roma and lose in this game, I'd still be like, I've seen enough. Because if we can't aspire to being the best team in Italy, if we can't prove that we can compete against the team, the only team that's above us in the table, then we might as well rip it all up. I don't see this going any other way. They've got all the motivation to win. We're going to be tired after Thursday night. I think we're going to be turning the TV off on 90 minutes to avoid watching the celebrations.
Yeah, I think God, I'll be at work. Unfortunately, we will be watching, but I could go do other things, you know, as soon as I need to
jump off a bridge, etc.
Yeah. Look, we're gonna lose. It's gonna be 6 in a row. I've seen nothing from Pioli to suggest that he has come up with a new plan or changed his ways. If anything, he's proven that he hasn't. We haven't lost to a team this badly, this consecutively, since Juve's decade of dominance and we were in the banter era. Like, there's no reason that, you know, they're first, we're second, and it's been like that for a while. Obviously, last season was kind of an anomaly for both teams, but the reality is if you alternate wins in derbies each season, okay, you know, that's fine, whatever, it happens. And that's what we were doing. Like, even last season, people forget we won the first meeting against them, and then we just had to play them 6 times, and we lost the last 5. I don't know what people want me to say here. We're losing this game. If we didn't have the motivation to show up and beat them in a Champions League semifinal for a chance to go to the Champions League final as defending champions of Serie A, what makes you think that we're going to be able to stop Inter from winning the second star against us, the team they show up against the most? Like, and I don't even think this Inter side is better than some of the teams that beat us in the past, you know? Like, but we're getting smoked here. It is what it is. Like, I don't want to watch it. I don't want to be there. Like,
they just got so much more motivation to make history. It's happened before. Like, we've had a guard of honor for a derby and stuff like that. You know, there are always big moments in this fixture because of how successful the two teams have been relatively. And I kind of like the fact that there is something on this game and a reason for everybody to tune in and be like, oh, look, the Milan clubs are back to serving up classics and stuff. It's just a fucking nightmare scenario. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say. I wish they'd have won it before, if they needed a draw to do it, and a draw is all they got, so they kind of played for a draw, I'd almost be like, well, you didn't beat us to get it, you know, and now it's like, they're going to beat us to get it. And it's a double celebration. I don't know, man. I think I have to give some credit as well through Gritted Teeth. I think they have been one of the most dominant sides that we've seen in recent Serie A history. You know, right up there with the Juve sides that won the back-to-back-to-back-to-back, whatever. Stylistically, they might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I think that they're a better side to watch than Conte's Inter team. I think that the record speaks for itself. They're conceding, like, on average, less than half a goal per game. They've been the highest scorers in the division by a mile. They've hit gold with their signings. You know, Çalhanoğlu's unfortunately become a very key player for them. The centre-backs that they've brought in, like Pavard and Bissek, look pretty good. They've got genuine depth with Augusto now on the left side, left wing-back. Thuram's obviously been a good pickup for them on a free transfer, although he's stopped scoring as regularly recently. It's just a well-constructed squad. It's a squad that's built to win now, and I think that's why we're at different points in our project. Yes, there is always that financial bomb, time bomb hanging over Inter, and it's like, when is it going to go off? Seems to keep being kicked down the road for now, but in the meantime, they're racking up multiple trophies while we're sat watching on TV, and that's not acceptable. You know, they've trimmed that trophy gap right down now. And I think that this game, if they were to win it, as I think that they will, and Cardinale is meant to be there in attendance, I hope that he feels it as strongly as the fans will feel it. To say, we can't let this happen again. Like, mission next season is to draw level with them on two stars, and that will be the only.
And I think that was reported, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like Republica or something, but yeah, someone said, like, the objective is two stars, and it should be. It should have been this season's objective, you know?
I agree.
Once you hit the 19th one, your objective is to get 20. Like, that's a no-brainer. So, yeah, I mean, it also helps when you get 20 penalties, you know, in a season. So
I won't recognize it being their 20th either. I mean, they were handed one of them through the courts, which doesn't count in my opinion. I know that Inter fan who watches every episode is going to reply to that. So when he does, I just like to preempt it by saying bite. And also, what was I say? Yeah, Morata, all a bit dodgy to me. They can go on to 20 to 19 or whatever, 19 all in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But it'll always be 7 to 3, you know. They're not trimming that Champions League gap down anytime soon, so we'll hold that over them. But we need to win a trophy season. Like, that really needs to be the objective. You can't have a Scudetto win as a false dawn. You know, you shouldn't be allowed to regress from there. The hope is that clean slate next season, the pace that we've been on in 2024, couple more signings in positions that we need, potentially some new ideas from a new coach. We'll see about that. The gap will just be completely eroded. But at the moment, there is a very big gap present. It's a bigger gap from us to Inter than it is for us to out of the top four. And that is problematic. But again, yeah, I suppose I begrudgingly tip my hat to them and say they've had a fucking excellent season. My prediction is that we lose 3-1.
Oh, I was going to go 4-0 loss. I think we're getting fucked here.
Yeah. I can understand why people might have a bit of hope going into this one. Not like the, oh, it's a new year thing, but just that that there is so much to fight for on our side, you know, to make sure that it doesn't happen. And I also think that it depends on the Roma result, of course, but we know that, like, this is the last chance to really make a statement in the season. So maybe that'll fire some players up, especially some of the players who have it quite personal with Inter, you know, like Teo and I guess they'll want to crunch into Çalhanoğlu as well. But yeah, I just think they're a better team. And it pains me to say it, but they're a better team in nearly every department. And I think that will play out again on the pitch, and I hope to be wrong.
I don't think the gap between the quality of the teams is as large as the results would lead people to believe.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it comes down to manager and tactics.
Yeah, 100%. The head-to-head record shows that. And consistency as well. I just think they've been really consistent. Like, if you take out that blip that we had towards the end of last year, but you could say that about a lot of seasons under Pioli, we always have that crisis period, and that's what sees us drop off from being Scudetto contenders. So Inter just haven't had that. Yeah, they went out in Europe to Atletico, and we can laugh at them, and you know, but they still went further in the Champions League than us. They're still going to have a title to celebrate. They won the Super Cup again. It's like, we're clutching at straws, man. So we need a bit of something to restore some pride and have something to cling on to. We'll do a couple of questions and then we'll round it off.
Like one or two.
Edward O'Donnell, is it time to switch formation to four in midfield, seeing teams run through us every game, no matter how poor the opponent is?
Yes, good question. I mentioned earlier, 4-4-2 might work for us.
A diamond would be interesting. I'd like to see a diamond. The problem is we don't have a natural six. So any combination in the midfield that you put out there is going to be unbalanced in some way. I still think the sheer number of combinations in midfield that we've tried has been ridiculous, to be honest. I don't know how you can expect anyone to build up any chemistry with the amount of turnover we've had in that department. Some of it's injuries and whatnot, but just generally speaking, like, we haven't stumbled upon that winning formula. Benacer Reinders seems to be the best at the moment, but then, you know, Adli's had his moments. I think Musa looks pretty bright, struggled against Sassuolo. We need a six just to rebalance everything, and then I think we can talk about a potential formation change. Casey Cordroy, with six Serie A games left, how secure do you think second place is?
I'd say it's pretty damn secure. I don't even know how big is the gap right now. I'm trying to six pull points. It up here. Yeah, 6 points. Look, we're losing to Inter, but is Juve going to beat anyone? Like, they're struggling, and then we play them, then they play Roma, and then they play Bologna and Monza. Like, Monza's got a great record against Juventus, so the chance of Juventus catching us, slim. I think there's a better chance of Bologna catching us, and they're 10 points behind, so who knows. I think it's pretty secure. I also think fifth place as a Champions League spot is almost done, so
99%, I think,
honestly. If we beat Roma, who gives a fuck about the league anymore? You know, like, do this stupid rotation shit and just rest everyone and win Europa League, then I'm content. But
there is actually a chance that we could be back below Juve within a couple of weeks, into beating us in a derby and then winning, and then them beating us when we play them would have them above us. So I suppose, how locked up is it? Whenever it's, you know, 10 days away from being reality, you can't say it's fully locked up, but Juventus are on such a bad run of form, and there's as much uncertainty surrounding them as there is us at the moment. I think they're gonna change managers in the summer, and we might regret not going for Motta, who seems to be heading there. But yeah, not entirely locked up, but with every passing week, I look at that Juve team and say they've given up. You know, they've given up. Anyway, let's wrap it up there. Thank you to everybody for listening to our four game recap and rambles. Hopefully next week we will have two wins to talk about, because that would be potentially season defining. Reminder to check out the Substack, link in the description. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
See you guys next week.
See you next week.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!